right, welcome to Highly Questionable. We have Dominique Fosworth joining us from D.C. Izzy Gutierrez joining us from some, like, Nordic village of sorts. I don't know how he picked it, but here we are.
It's chilly.
The Caucasus?
How will you remember the Gonzaga-UCLA game?
Okay, now I have been very hard on UCLA on this show because I hate watching mucked up basketball. They got to the Final Four by winning a game 51-49. I was not here for that. And then they participated in maybe the best college basketball game I've seen in almost 30 years. It was fast. It was fun. People were getting it done. And this is how it ended. Johnny Juzang, who transferred to UCLA from Kentucky, got it back. Like, what a great play. All right, cool. 3 seconds left. We are going to over. No, y'all going back to L.A., baby. Bag your stuff. Head out. What a shot, right? And it's when, like, Jalen Suggs put up some heave, right? Nope. Like, no, he put up a shot with a hand in his face. Didn't call glass. Don't matter. Nailed it. And then one of the best quotes ever. I always wanted to jump on the table like Kobe or D-Wade. Too bad for him there weren't any people there. Here's how good that game was. That game and that finish was so good that what I'm about to show you is the second most impressive thing to happen in that game. We just showed you the first. Here's Jalen Suggs explaining to you why it is that he's going to make a lot of money. Blocked it. Got it. Now look at this. One hand bounce pass to the homie Timmy. Oh, I thought Timmy had done the Omega thing there for a second. I was about to say, hey, don't do that outside of Spokane, buddy. No, man, that was wildly entertaining. And if somebody's been critical of this whole tournament and it's the quality of play, I could not have asked for more than we got out of that semifinal game.
Yeah, I have to side with you there. It's like, it made me look stupid because I've been complaining about this all along, how poorly this game has been played. But I was happy to look stupid in this moment. It was a fun game, well played, lots of big shots hit. It wasn't about guys crumbling in the moment. Most of them stepped up. But Jalen Suggs, as much as that looked like a real shot, like it wasn't like a heave, it's still random. Like, you cannot count on that shot going in. It's disappointing. What do you mean?
Everybody really doing this?
Listen to Mark Few. He makes like 3 out of 5 of those to end practice like every day.
I heard Mark Few say that, and I also heard Jalen Suggs say he ain't hit one in a long time. So who you gonna believe, the man who shoot or the man who watched the man who shoot? Only point I'm making is the course of that entire game, I was more shocked not by Jalen Suggs hitting that shot, but by UCLA being in it. The Jalen Suggs hitting that shot was impressive, but that's not the story of the game in my view. That's how I'm going to remember it, because that's the question, because that's how we do. We're going to condense this all down to one moment. We're going to remember that. But watching the game with it fresh in my mind from yesterday, that was one of the least impressive things of the day. The block and the pass together, much more impressive. Juzang's shot, follow, put it in that spot with all those Gonzaga guys right there. Like, that's more impressive. That's the only point I'm trying to make. I didn't realize that was so controversial.
Nah, you sounded like a hater. You did. You did sound like a hater.
Because I sat there on my couch for a solid 10 minutes after that game, and I just thought about it. And I said to myself, that's the best college basketball game I've ever seen. Not prisoner of the moment stuff. And I did watch, at least the second half, I was like this tall. I did watch Duke and Kentucky back in the day and watch Christian Laettner hit that shot. This one was better, and here's why. And, you know, you could say all you want about Suggs, Timmy, whatever. Thank you, UCLA. Thank you, Johnny Juzang, Tiger Campbell. Like, I love those two players. And by the end of that game, I wanted to see UCLA win because I wanted those two guys to keep playing because they are, especially Juzang, man. Like, I literally sent a text of a group text and said, can the Heat trade Tyler Hero for Juzang now? Because that guy is sick and he's such a good shooter and he was just finding his spots. And it was all like old school basketball. Hey, let's try all this stuff. Hey, if our switches don't work, all right, whatever. Let me just get this bucket off of this guy. And if it wasn't Campbell, if it wasn't Juzang, if it wasn't, I mean, this guy, Jacquez in the corner with that big three when they were down 5 was absolutely huge. And then Cody Riley just casually hitting 17 footers. You have to catch Gonzaga on a bad day, and frankly, outside of Ayayi and Suggs, they were kind of having a bad day, and play the way UCLA played to even have a chance. And then, break your heart, Jalen Suggs with the 3. I don't know if I've seen a more entertaining one. I've declared it's the best one I've ever seen. I don't know if there's been a better one out there that I just didn't see.
All right, now, it's not Duke, Kentucky. I can't agree with you on that, but I do think that there are parallels between those, because what you had in those games was a favorite that was there and established as like the team. That's what Duke was in that game. That's what Gonzaga was in this game. and a blue blood that also gave you some Cinderella characteristics, except for Kentucky. It was the four dudes that nobody thought anything about, right? The ones that were there when the program went all the way down to the ashes, plus Jamal Mashburn. And
so then they were actually
up, right? They were actually up in that game. And then Christian Laettner, who had 10 for 10 from the floor, 10 for 10 from the line. Like, there are all those other things that get added into it, sure, as to why I think that was a better game. But there's a whole generation that will say that this one was the best, because I can't imagine one being better.
So I'm the hater. We are enjoying the moment. We're enjoying the moment. Great game. And you come with all these facts and analysis to knock us off.
Because I didn't call nobody lucky. That's why.
Bo, do you remember just how hard you were on UCLA?
It wasn't that hard, was it? Please, somebody stop UCLA, because maybe it'll be good for the ratings because it's Los Angeles if they get into the final game. But it will be dreadful if we actually have to watch them continue to play. Yes, and thank you, Gonzaga, for stopping UCLA. Like, thank you, UCLA. You played the best game that you could possibly play. You know damn well they weren't going to give you that good a game next time. It was the best of both worlds. You got UCLA, they played well, and now we got them up out of here.
Would it surprise you if Baylor wins tonight?
All right, now, it has been a weird season in college basketball. We all understand this, but Gonzaga and Baylor have been the best two teams in the country basically all season long. They have pretty much been the best two teams in the tournament, and now we get them in a national championship game. And it's so wild that as good as Baylor has been, after we just saw Gonzaga have to fight off UCLA, we're asking if Baylor even has a chance to win. Yes, they do have a chance to win. The only thing, though, and I recognize I might be hating, but we're all like this. Once we decide that a coach can't coach, I don't know what that coach can do to make you believe that he can coach. And Scott Drew, even after taking Baylor to the Elite Eight three times, after taking Baylor to the Final Four, if this is close and it comes down to coaching, who's your money on? Mark Few or Scott Drew? The answer for me is still not Scott Drew. So maybe Baylor can find a way to make this happen, but I don't think they're enough better than Gonzaga to overcome what the margins are in this one. I'm going with Gonzaga.
You can make the argument that this final is kind of making up for 2 years worth of NCAA tournament, because people would say that this would have been the matchup last year. These two teams were so good. So I think it's just fitting after a year with no basketball or no NCAA tournament that we get 1v1, the top two teams in the country. But I don't think it's going to be much of a matchup. I think Gonzaga is going to roll in this one. And I just think it has to do with Baylor's size. I mean, just look at that starting lineup. It's 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", and then a 6'10 guy who plays about 14 minutes a game. While Davion Mitchell's been fantastic, I mean, the guy shoots 45% from three. He's a big-time shot maker, and that's what Baylor will do. They'll run you up and down. They'll defend you. They'll find open threes that doesn't require, you know, half-court offense, and they shoot the lights out. But I have a feeling Gonzaga, especially Jalen Suggs defensively, is going to be a huge factor again, just like he was in that second half against Juzang. And I just see them sort of riding that momentum. You're not going to get more nerves than you did in a tight game against UCLA in the Final Four, where you're the big favorite and you only played one game within double figures all season long. You escape that game with that victory, it feels like you're just going to run through the next game. So kind of using actual analysis and just a little bit of, like, you know, fan analysis to say that Gonzaga is going to win this one.
Well, if you just showed up for the semifinals, then you would be surprised that we're even having this conversation, because it looked like Baylor dominated the better opponent in that situation. But we know there's a lot more to it than that. I think the inside presence you're talking about, somebody defend Timmy, is probably a problem for Baylor going forward. But obviously they have a chance to win, because we know that guard play matters. And as good as Jalen Suggs is, Mitchell, at least as a college basketball player, has been just as good. And if he goes off, they will be competitive at the end of the game. And as we know, anything could happen in the final seconds of a close game. Somebody could even maybe, I don't know, get lucky.
I'm trying to figure out something to say, but I just feel like I'm going to just start hating on Scott Drew again. Like, do you realize that Baylor had not made the Elite Eight since 1950, before they went in 2010? Like people ask, like, yo, Scott Drew, way to rebuild that program after Dave Bliss. Even if Dave Bliss hadn't been there, like, way to go. What an amazing job he's done there. And I have no faith in you whatsoever, because that's just how we do sometimes.
I'm starting to change my mind now. Given all the hate he had on UCLA and they made it all the way this, now I feel like Baylor's going to win. I mean, they're deeper. Gonzaga only goes too deep off the bench. Corey Kispert, man, make a shot. He was 2-for-8 against UCLA, and he's supposed to be the All-American on that roster. Come on, guys. I don't know. I think you might have got me switched here, though. I think the fan in me is saying Baylor's probably going to win just based on this.
You know UCLA lost, right? I just want to make sure that you remember that. Like, I was right.
Up next on HQ.
For the majority of this tournament, the women's game has been much more entertaining than the men's tournament has. I'm really curious to see how they build on this from here on out, because the tournament also built a star in Paige Beckers that people are going to pay attention to for a while. And best case scenario, UConn didn't win. Like, the tournament doesn't feel like we're just setting it up for UConn to win it. They were good. They got through. But this, I think, is big for that tournament.
Highly Questionable is brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. Only pay for what you need. Should Ari McDonald have passed the ball on Arizona's final possession?
All right, so Arizona got to the championship game of the women's college basketball tournament by riding Ari McDonald. She was their star, and they were going to her no matter what. And when I say no matter what, I mean, look at this. All right. Count the defenders. There's, all right. That's all of them. That's all of them. Now, Coach Adia Barnes said that they had decided that they were going to her no matter what. Yes, there were other people open. I don't know how she was supposed to see them surrounded by all those people. And not once did she or anybody else consider that that ball was going to be passed. They had made that decision in the huddle. It would have been great if she had made it. Yeah, she probably should have passed. You can make that argument. But I see how it goes. It's just a tragic ending for them. But great for Stanford, who won their first championship in 29 years.
Yeah, I really, last week on Friday's show, I really flexed all my women's basketball knowledge and told you about all the teams, got you ready, and told you that there was one team out of the four that had no chance of winning the title. And I said it was Ari McDonald in Arizona. So I feel really stupid. So who am I to question her decision-making at this point? So, yeah, it'd have been nice if she would have found some way to get it around all those people to the open player. But also, she got the shot up, and she got it on the rim, and she is the only reason why they're there. I don't know if Adia Barnes could have considered drawing up a play for someone else. I think the right decision is to get the ball in her hands and live with the decision that she made. She made a decision, miraculously, under a soft quadruple team, as our producer noticed, miraculously got the ball up to a point where I was like, this might have a chance, and missed it. So, yeah, I mean, maybe pass it, but it's hard to be critical of that team because they so overachieved even getting to that moment.
Yeah, defensively, they were amazing. Look, I go back to the end of UConn-Baylor and Dejanay Carrington sort of driving into a double team and getting fouled, not getting the call, and them losing and complaining about that, and UConn going ahead to win. And I thought McDonald here, a smaller player, obviously very quick. I thought the goal there was maybe try to draw a foul, you know, because obviously she's frail and can, you know, contact will affect her. Didn't do that. And you could argue, like you guys said, that the player on her right was not only open but visible. Like, you could still see her, right? But even her, after a second, you notice she's just going to crash for the board because she knows McDonald against that double team, soft quadruple team, is going to take that shot. And what I thought was amazing was just, like, watching or listening right after immediately, and they were just like, wow, that shot almost went in. And looking back, I just thought it was a terrible shot. It didn't go in. Watch the replay. That shot hit back of the rim and came back out like it was online. And so, yeah, should she have passed it? Probably. But wide open player, teammate, or, you know, triple team, soft quadruple team McDonald, probably 50-50.
Yeah, I tell you, there's something bigger that went on with this, though. And I saw Max Kellerman talk about this on First Take today. It feels like this might have been a real turning point for the women's tournament in terms of national interest and people being in it. Like, we are talking about it higher in television shows like this than I recall we ever did. Like, I think one thing that happened in the pandemic was we saw the WNBA get an uptick in interest because people were in a position to watch the game and hadn't, and they have seen that this is not what women's ball was 20, 30 years ago. The level of play has stepped up a great deal. And for the majority of this tournament, the women's game has been much more entertaining than the men's tournament has. I'm really curious to see how they build on this from here on out because the tournament also built a star in Paige Beckers that people are going to pay attention to for a while. And best case scenario, UConn didn't win. Like, the tournament doesn't feel like we're just setting it up for UConn to win it. They were good. They got through. But this, I think, is big for that tournament and future interest in that sport.
Up next on HQ.
I mean, I bet you if he celebrates a little too much, they don't hit him with the ball. Because you're going to get that one-on-one in your rib cage. I bet Ohtani could do whatever the hell he wants after he hit a home run because he's lighting up your whole team.
He's like, yeah, I ain't even coming to the mound. I got you. Just give it a minute.
I don't think that you just wake up and walk in and you host the show like that. If you do, then he is going to be fantastic. And I will celebrate him because I'm not a hater. I'm a lover like you guys.
Dom, everything's on the cards, Dom. He doesn't have to do anything but read. He doesn't have to know the answers. It's not that hard.
Do you question if this play from Raimel Tapia was impressive or embarrassing?
All right, so Tapia is the left fielder for the Colorado Rockies. Let's get a look at this play. All right, here we go. Oh,
not gone.
Oh, did he hit his head? Oh, inside the park home run.
There's got to be something more to this.
He had it. So he saved a home run, but instead he created a home run.
So it's all the same. So 0 + 0 = 0. You got to get some sort of credit for that, right? Like just bringing it back into the park. It should be like a ground rule triple or something. Like you can't go any further than third base because that was one of the most amazing athletic things you can see in baseball. And it's a home run.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to be critical of him in that moment. Like, he's laying down on the ground. You have to assume that he's somewhat hurt. It's a home run either way. It's nothing you can ask for other than maybe everyone else needs to be running to the ball. Football is the way that we all should live in our lives. Everyone run to the ball until you hear the whistle. Somebody else need to be there to help my man out. I don't blame him. I blame them.
Now, is it really an inside the park home run, though? Because it clearly went outside the park, right? It was an outside the park home run, and then he saved it and turned it into an inside the park home run. I'm just saying this for the dude who hit the home run, who doesn't want y'all to be smirching it, acting like it's Little League, and it just, you know, bounced around the whole way instead of, you know, displaying his power.
I've always been of the opinion, if it goes over the line, if it's in the stands, it should be a home run. You can't catch that thing. You're out of bounds, man.
That's discouraging athleticism. I hate that. That's awful. I was going a whole different way. I was about to ask Bo Monty when he gets his dreads, are he going to dye him blonde like that? But then you distracted me by hating on athleticism, and now I'm just angry.
Tonight at 9:38 p.m. Eastern, Astros and Angels.
9:38 p.m. Okay. So Shohei Ohtani, for those of you who don't pay that much attention to baseball, he's a Japanese player. He pitches and he hits. Now we're going to show you him pitching first. Keep an eye on his radar gun. Yeah, that's a buck 01. Right. 101. Now, what happens when he bats? Apparently, they have a radar gun for that, too.
Yum.
Yeah, that's 115 miles an hour on what they call exit velo. You hit that thing 450 feet, which is the part that matters to me. Like, I know what that means.
Bo, you said take a look. You should play that back and take a listen to both of them. Both the swing and the pitch, because that pitch hits so hard. Even the announcers are like, whoa. Oh.
Who's screaming? Is that Ohtani screaming too?
Now, let's get to the crack of the bat, though, because that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that is baseball. That's
like, I understand.
And there are people in the stands too. It's not an empty stadium there.
Yeah. And by the way, I understand like Ohtani's different, but as the pitcher, how do you feel giving up a 450-foot home run to the pitcher?
I mean, I bet you if he celebrates a little too much, they don't hit him with the ball because you're gonna get that one-on-one in your rib cage. I bet Ohtani could do whatever the hell he wants after he hit a home run because he's lighting up your whole team.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I ain't even coming to the mound. I got you. Just give it a minute.
Yeah, what if he get hit and then he just pick it up and throw it back at that moment? Like that's what I need out of my Ohtani.
In syndication, Jeopardy.
All right, so Jeopardy still trying to find a permanent host, and now we have a trailer for this week's guest host.
From Jeopardy fan.
Growing up, it was my favorite show.
To Jeopardy champ.
He is the winner today.
To Jeopardy guest host.
Other than the Super Bowl, this is the honor of a lifetime.
The NFL's most valuable player, Aaron Rodgers, is here.
Following in the footsteps of a legend is something that I know a little bit about.
Presenting clues and raising money for small business.
The money that you earn today is going to be matched for the North Valley Community Foundation.
All week on Jeopardy.
I mean, I am intrigued, and I am sure this will definitely help Aaron Rodgers with the perception that he thinks he's smarter than everybody else. Yeah, that's me getting on somebody for thinking he's smarter than everybody else. Izzy, are you intrigued?
I am. Not so much because of the corny, I know what it's like to follow a legend thing, but I call BS on Aaron Rodgers saying that Jeopardy was his favorite show growing up. Because if you're a child and Jeopardy is your favorite show growing up, I don't think you grew up to be an NFL player. I just don't.
Okay, so we started this show where I was being a hater. So it's clear that you guys have both passed me in hatitude, because that's just a nonsense thing to hate on. And you just hating on Drew, despite the fact that he's a great coach and he's gotten his team to the final, to the championship game. Just, well, I mean, the numbers suggest. Anyway, to Aaron Rodgers hosting the show, like, I will be surprised if he is, like, serviceable. I will be so happy and celebrate. I will be watching this. But it's such a hard thing to do. It's no disrespect to Aaron Rodgers, but, like, I don't think that you just wake up and walk in and you host the show like that. If you do, then he is going to be fantastic, and I will celebrate him because I'm not a hater. I'm a lover like you guys.
Dom, everything's on the card, Dom. He doesn't have to do anything but read. He doesn't have to know the answers. It's not that hard.
All right, that is our show. They tell me that Izzy is actually in Telluride right now. At least his background is. Check him out on the Slopes, Dominique Foxworth. Check him out on Foxworth Fridays on the right time. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Drew versus Few.
Hey, rhymes.
Is this the first national championship game where coaches' names rhyme?
Wow. Somebody look that up. That's the best part.